Welcome back. My name's Thomas. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Thomas.
Housekeeping, smoking outside, cigarette butts in the sand-filled buckets, please. Fire exit at the front and the back of this building, and the toilets out of the door on the right, or there's some through the refectory in the main house. The preamble. I'll skip the preamble. What we do is this is the last session. Hopefully that mic, because we have it at the start of this session, is send tradition seven round now before anybody escapes, goes home early. So that will go round again now. Just while that's going round, can we just have a show of hands for those who'd be interested in having a countdown of a signed big book for the shortest period of sobriety at the end of the day? Raise your hand now if you think this is a good idea, please. Okay, so lads at the back, if you can sort a book. And our fourth old-timer is John M. From the Staines Saturday group. And the first old-timer that John met was Van, and his first meeting was Kingston. And now over to you, John, just to be clear. I know you know, but you got an hour. Over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm John M. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to be talking about my favourite subject, me. Just thinking of Van, actually, who was tremendously helpful to me when I was doing service in intergroup. Van was very much an old public school boy, and he was part of the first meetings in London in Caxton Hall. And he said he was talking about a steeplejack who came to the meetings, and I'll try and imitate Van's voice. He said, well, this chap came to us. He was a steeplejack, and he was having trouble keeping his balance at 300 feet, and we sympathised with him because we were having the same trouble at ground level. So I always remember Van for that. I came to my first meeting on the 12th September. No, I didn't. I came to my first meeting. I don't know what the date was. It was 1969. And I stood outside that meeting. And I had just lost my first business. I lost three businesses. And my wife had cheek to suggest I might be an alcoholic, she wanted me to go to a meeting, so I thought I'd go. And I went to this meeting in Greenwich, and I remember standing outside that meeting and saying, John, you are not an alcoholic, you know, you don't want to be an alcoholic, and these people in here are going to try and brainwash you, they're going to try and tell you you're an alcoholic. Just remember, don't listen. And that was the open mind that I took into my first AA meeting. There was only two people there. One was an old boy, and he really did have a dirty raincoat, and he had a pot of tea. And the other one was a merchant seaman who had just come off a binge and couldn't sit down. So this old boy started to give me his problems. Actually, what he was doing was sharing with me. But I thought he was giving me his problems. I had enough problems. I didn't need his as well. And the sailor just walked around the room for the whole hour and a half that I was there. And I remember thinking, they're crazy. They're absolutely crazy. What am I doing here, you know? But I know who was crazy, because I said to myself when I went out that room, I said, when you get that bad, you'll come back. Not if, when you get that bad, you'll come back. And it took me 10 years to go out there to try and prove that I wasn't an alcoholic, only to prove I was an alcoholic, you know. And so I got back on the 12th September 1979, so I'm 36 years sober, and I'm 83 years in this life. So I'm very happy, alcoholic, to have survived that much long. Ten years from that point, in other words, 10 years sober, I was coming back from a dinner with my wife. I'd been to a Chinese restaurant. It was a lovely summer's day like this. It was beautiful, late summer. Driving down, and this policeman put his hand out, waved me in. And I came to the window, and he said, where have you been tonight, sir? I said, I've been for a meal with my wife. He said, did you have a drink? I said, no, I don't drink. And he looked at me, he said, you don't drink? I said, no, I don't drink. He says, oh, well, you have no problem then blowing into this machine. I said, no, not at all, give me it. He said, well, let me explain, sir. He says, it's not the old green bag we used to have. This is high tech, and this is a new machine. And when you blow into it, if it goes to orange, you've had a drink, but you're not over the limit. But if it goes to red, I'm sorry, sir, I'll have to take you down the station. I said, fine. So I blew into it, and it went to orange. Now, I don't know whether there was spice still on my breath or whether it was rigged or whatever, but it went on. She said, ah, yes, sir. Well, you have had a drink. I said, I haven't had a drink. He said, it's gone to orange. I said, I don't care what colour it's gone to. I haven't had a drink. I haven't had a drink in 10 years. He said, well, I've heard it takes a long time to leave the system. And I thought, my God. And then I went away and I thought about it. And, you know, the funny thing is, there's usually a message in these kind of things. And I started to look at where the message might be here. And I said to myself, John, how long will it be for your alcoholism to leave your system? And the answer is, it never does, you know. So, you know, that was a little bit of a help he gave me there, you know. I was a complete convert to alcohol. You know, I believed all the ads, you know. I believed Guinness was good for you, you know. I believed if you drank a certain kind of vodka, a blonde chauffeuse would turn up and drive you in a motor and take you water skiing, you know. I believed everything. I got deprogrammed when I came into EE. I got deprogrammed, you know. And I remember the last days of my drinking. I can't remember when I took my first drink. I wasn't a drinker until I was up to about 22. I had been engaged, and then that was broken off, and I decided I didn't want to get involved, and I would go drinking with the lads. I had about 5 years to catch up on, you know, but I did. So it was about 22 when I really started to get into it, you know, and up there, my God, in Scotland, oh dear God, it was like gunfighting, you know, across the table. And they had all these wonderful theories, you know, that if you drank a double scotch quick, you didn't get as drunk as sipping a small scotch slowly, because it didn't go into the bloodstream, you know. So quickly, you know, I mean, these are, you know, unbelievable. I was a subscriber to everything that was said about alcohol that was good, you know. So coming in was the best thing I ever did. The last day of my drinking, I remember what happened, and it wasn't the biggest drink I've ever had in my life or anything. I had worse ones. But what happened was my wife asked me to go and collect my child, who was nine, a little girl, from a party she was at. And I left half an hour before the party ended, but I didn't go to the party, I went to the pub. And so when I got to the party, it was about an hour later, and she was the last kid there. And I took her back, but I didn't take her home. I took her back to the pub, and I put her in the pub garden, and I gave her a packet of crisps and a Coca-Cola so she could enjoy herself, you know. And it was a cold night, you know. And I went into that pub, and I was the life and soul of the party. I was telling jokes, and, you know, everybody was laughing, and it was a packed pub. And I was suddenly aware of something, you know, tugging at me, and I turned around, and there's this little blonde kid, you know, tugging at my shirt, saying, "Dad." And I thought, oh, my God. I was so full of remorse, I wanted to vomit. That's how bad I felt. I felt terrible, because I could have gone out the other door of the pub and driven home. You know, I forgot about it. It wasn't important. What was important was drinking, you know. And I went home, and I couldn't take what was going on in my head. So I went to the cupboard, and I got out the bottles, and I cleaned every bottle. There wasn't much left in the bottles, but I did drink everything to try and shut this thing out. And then when I came in the morning, I said to my wife, "Do you know, I think I'm an alcoholic." And she said, "I don't care what you are." She says, "You go ahead and kill yourself. I'm going to get on with my life." And that really frightened me, you know, because it was one thing to have a row with your wife, storm out and go down the pub, and everybody there would tell you, "Don't worry about it. I had that last week," you know, and women, you know, just don't bother, you know. But when somebody says, "Go ahead and kill yourself," then, you know, you have to pay attention. So I phoned AA up the following, on the Monday, and I don't know why I phoned them, because you were no use to me, were you? I mean, I gave you an hour and a half of my valuable time 10 years ago, and you didn't get me sober. So, you know, this is not going to work, you know. But I phoned them up anyway, and posh lady on the phone, Margaret. I got to know her later. She was a wife of a doctor, and she answered the phone, and she said, "My name's Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic." And I thought, whew, if I was an alcoholic, I wouldn't even be telling anyone on the telephone, you know. I mean, it's just, not on, you know. She says, "Can you meet, what is it, have your drinking problems?" So I told her that it looked as though my wife was going to divorce me, the car was going to be repossessed, I hadn't paid the mortgage for months, and the bank manager wouldn't give me any more money. And yes, I think maybe I drank a little bit too much, you know. And she says, "Turn the list upside down and see what happens." She says, "Can you get to a meeting?" And I said, "Where is it?" She said, "Kingston." I said, "Okay." She says, "Without a drink?" And I said, "Of course." But I remember now, it was a pretty sweaty 2 days to get there, you know. And I got there in the evening, and I was standing, and I didn't want to go up the stairs. The stairs were so steep, it looked like Mount Everest, you know. It was, how am I going to get up? People were coming in, they were saying, "Good evening." I was saying, "Yeah, good evening." I was checking them out, you know. "Oh, I think she's probably a social worker. Oh, yeah, I think he's an alcoholic. Yeah, he looks like," you know, and they were saying good evening, you know. And I heard the sound at the top of the stairs there that I love in AA meetings, but I hated it that night. It was the sound of people laughing. And I thought, what have they got to laugh about? I mean, if they've given up drink, they must be miserable. I mean, what, you know. Anyway, I thought, I'd better go up, I'm here. So I walked up the stairs, and this guy made a beeline for me, Kingston Tony, straight for me, and he said, are you a newcomer, you know? And I said, yes. He says, my name is Tony, and I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, Christ, another one, you know? He says, it's the first drink that does the damage. And I said, no, maybe with you. I said, it's around about my 9th or 10th that does it. He says, you're not listening to me. If you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. I thought, I've never heard that. I never heard that in any saloon bar or, you know, anywhere anybody saying to me, you know, if you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. That blew me away. Although I have an Irish friend that thought he got round that because he went to an AA meeting, came straight out, went over to the bar, said to the barman, pour me a whiskey, and the barman poured him a whiskey, and he said, pour that down the sink and give me another one. He said, what are you doing? He said, I've been to AA, and he said, it's the first drink that does the damage. Pour it down the sink and have the second one. Yeah, that's alcoholic thinking. That really is alcoholic thinking, yeah. So anyway, I got into that meeting and I got hope. I really thought, hey, maybe it's not as... What struck me was the honesty. I knew, you know, there was an old boy there, Van, actually, who had been quite high in the Baltic Exchange in the city, and had finished up in a padded cell, you know. There was another woman who middle-aged and middle-class and a perfectly respectable woman who shared about wetting the bed, you know. It was more information than I needed, but, you know, it came through. She was being sincere, she was being honest. So... I got a lot of hope, and I went to the next meeting. There wasn't so many meetings in these days, but I went to the next meeting, which was in Richmond, and I got a terrific welcome from the secretary there. He looked as though I was a long-lost friend. He'd just seen again, you know. He came and hugged me, and, you know, I was very impressed. And I fell in love with AA. I fell in love completely. And I'd honestly love to tell you that I did everything they said. I didn't. I almost did the opposite, you know. I almost did the opposite because I'm different and special, and I have to look at things in a different way. And I thought the program was a great program for the rest of you, but John didn't need it, you know. It was like a buffet, you know. I'd have that, but I wouldn't have that. I'd have that, but no, I don't want that. I don't need that, you know. And I went through, I don't know if you went through these stages, but I went through these stages in AA where my first stage was the sainthood, when people kept coming up to me and saying, you haven't had a drink? No. How long? 3 months. 3 months? God, we admire you, you know. And the little halo came up and started spinning, you know, above my head, you know. And then I went through... People kept talking about it being a killer illness, and I don't hear that so much nowadays, but they talked about this killer illness. Oh, God, I got the miseries, you know. I just, oh, dear. Everybody else can have a drink and I can't have a drink. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Oh. And then I went through another stage, which was my missionary stage, where no one coming through that door was safe from me. You know, I had them, and I talked to them, and they better do this. And I couldn't understand how my golden words were not taking root, you know. And I remember going to a meeting at Richmond on a Friday night and sharing that I'm no good at this 12-stepping. I've had 3 this week. One ran out in the middle of the meeting. One ran out at the end before I could catch him, you know. And the third one has left me standing in the rain tonight. So, you know, I'm no good at this. I'm not going to do any more of this. And this guy came in, a guy called Jeff. And he came in so quickly, he almost cut me off. My name's Jeff, I'm an alcoholic. He says, I've had 100% success with every 12-step I've done. And I thought, this is an arrogant bastard, this one, you know. He says, I never had a drink after any of them.